Welcome into the NHL at the Rink podcast. As always, Dan Rosen here, Sean Rourke out there. Sean, trade deadline coming up April 12th. One guy that's already been moved, Eric Staal. He's going to be joining us on this podcast shortly, but I'm getting pumped for the deadline, and I hope I'm not disappointed, Sean.
Well, I guess it depends what your expectations are, right? First of all, I got to reset my body clock. Everybody says, you know, spring forward and how hard that is. We should almost be at playoff time. That's where my body is. That's where my beard is. That's where my hair is. But we're only at the trade deadline. So it's going to look, it's not going to be 8-hour extravaganza on NHL Network or TSN or Sportsnet or wherever you watch your trade coverage from. There'll be a lot of Olympic roster breakdowns, and we can talk about the Olympics maybe a little bit later in the show with Stan Bowman being named the U.S. GM. But there's going to be some moves, and you know what's going to be interesting is this week and these next 11 days leading up to it. The deadline may be a bust, but a lot of people are going to have a lot of fun speculating about what could happen that may not happen.
No question about it. You know what? Maybe it is like, it's like a cruel April Fool's joke, right? That we should be getting ready for the playoffs right now, and today being April Fool's Day, but we knew it was coming. So we're preparing for the deadline. You're right. You'll probably see some roster breakdowns and for the Olympics and all that, because it's not going to be, well, it might be, we don't know, you know, we don't know, but you know, a team that's been interesting me over the past couple of weeks here is the Nashville Predators, because Sean, as we record this, they've won 6 games in a row. If you asked me 2 weeks ago, I'd say to you, well, they got to be sellers, right? I mean, Ekholm, maybe they can get something from Matthias Ekholm here. He's got another year on his deal. The perfect guy to acquire at the trade deadline. Maybe even Philip Forsberg, and certainly Mikael Granlund and Erik Haula. And you know what? They've won 6 in a row. They're back in fourth place in the division, in the Discover Central division as we talk right now. There's absolutely no reason why they can't make the playoffs. It's not like the Blackhawks or the Blue Jackets or the Stars are blowing your hair back in any possible way. I don't know that Nashville's a good buyer, but stand pat, Nashville, and you'll be a playoff team.
But what does that accomplish for you? You draw Tampa Bay, right? Like, if you're going to do the status quo, why are you going to do it, right? You can hold off Chicago, Columbus, and Dallas. I mean, none of them, you look at their last 10 games, none of them have won more than 4. Nobody in that group is playing exceptionally well. I would still be a little concerned with Dallas. They got 4 games on everybody. You know, maybe they're starting to get a little bit healthier. Maybe they can figure out the inconsistencies that have been plaguing them. But you know, you're basically you're drawing a date, you would assume, with Tampa, but even Florida or Carolina. I mean, that's a killer division, and what do you get out of it? But the question is, what do you get out of making moves, right? I don't know what the market's going to be and what you can bring back. So, you know, to me, David Poile is always one of the most interesting guys at the trade deadline, because you just never know what he's going to do. He'll swing for the fences, and I think it's more likely that they make a move as a buyer than they would as a seller.
Yeah, I agree. And you asked what you're going to accomplish, but here's the thing, like, you get in, you got a chance. Right. So they're a team that's a veteran team. They're having some younger guys who are making impact. Eli Tolvanen's got 9 points during this 6-game winning streak. He's been terrific. But they're a veteran team that's been building for a long time. They had a run. They went to the Stanley Cup final and lost. This is not this isn't the Blackhawks, right? Where you're fighting for a playoff spot, but you're probably standing pat because you're looking at it and going, we can't mortgage any of our future here because we're building for the future here. Nashville has been built for the future. This is their future. It's right now. It's why they signed Duchesne. You got Forsberg there for another year, Ekholm for another year. Rossi's on a big deal, right? It's now. And you fight your way in. Maybe you get in on a roll. You never know what can happen. I mean, they went on a run before. We've seen it happen that teams will go on these types of runs once they get in. I think I don't know necessarily that David Poile's got to go out and spend some draft capital to improve the team, especially because you're going to get Ryan Ellis, Matt Duchesne, and Philip Forsberg all out week to week. You're going to get him back probably right after the trade deadline or a week or two after that, you know, and there's your influx. There's your infusion of what you need, and you go for it. You make a run, I think.
Yeah, no, look, I think so too. And you take your chances against one of those top 3 teams, and it's not like we've never seen a first round upset before. Right. You know, it certainly could happen. I don't think I'm with you. I don't think you in this case, you swing for the fences because the return isn't going to make you so much better that you jump ahead of the defending Stanley Cup champions.
That division, like you said, I mean, that it's a meat grinder at the top. There's no question about it. But that battle for fourth is interesting because it's not just the Predators. And you know, we certainly should be talking about Nashville because of the winning streak that they're on. But, I mean, do you buy Columbus at all? Are you buying Chicago at all? And do you think Dallas has a run in them? Those are three questions. I mean, I don't know. That's a reason why if I'm Nashville, I'm like, all right, I'm feeling pretty good because the Blackhawks have been struggling. You know, it's been the Patrick Kane and Alex DeBrincat show. How long can they carry that? The Blue Jackets are not getting much offense at all. I mean, I was looking up some of their numbers. Their goaltending is pretty good. Elvis Merzlikins and Jonas Korpisalo both 919 save percentage in the last 10 games. Patrick Laine's got one goal in those games. They're not getting much offense. Roslovic's got one goal in those 10 games. Bjorkstrand's got five, but they're scoring two a game. I don't know if I buy them. And Dallas, Sean, I mean, I think they are what they are at this point with the Dallas Stars.
Yeah, I mean, look, the hope with the Dallas Stars is they get a little bit healthier down the stretch and add a little bit. You know, Radulov comes back. Sagan started to skate. You kind of add to that mix. And look, they're a veteran team that went through some hardships last year and then made that run. So, you know, I always feel like a team like that, they can find a switch and turn it on. But I don't know if I'm nervous about them. And the team that I wonder about the most in that division now is Florida.
Yeah.
Right. Like we haven't been on the air since Ekblad got injured and what a cruel blow that was. He was having a fantastic year, a Norris Trophy caliber year, in my opinion. Does so much for that team. For people that don't watch that team, he's their Victor Hedman. I mean, he does everything for them. And he just, it's a crushing blow, right? And then Barkov hasn't played. Maybe Saturday, Quenneville said this morning, they might get Barkov and Hornquist back. And obviously that would be a huge addition. But you're pretty much replacing Ekblad with Strawman right now, unless you make a deal. They brought him back from the taxi squad. And he to me, he deserves to be a top six guy, but he's a straight shutdown guy. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not going to give you 20 points down the stretch here. So maybe with the forwards that they have, and if Barkov's healthy and Huberto's having a great year, they can address the offensive end of what Ekblad does, but the minutes, the defense, and the leadership are all huge holes that have to be filled somehow. And so if I'm Carolina or Tampa Bay, I feel a little bit better about my position right now.
And I think what you just said is interesting because we have heard that the Panthers we're likely going to be looking for a defenseman before the trade deadline, before the Ekblad injury. Now it's apps. I think they'll be scouring it around even harder now before the deadline to add a defenseman to get some depth there. But I think what you said is interesting. You let the offense take care of itself in certain way. Now he does so much right offensively for them. The power play production has been terrific too, but you've got guys who can pick up offense bar, you know, especially at the forward position. The defending part is the part that matters most to me, which is why I think if you're Bill Zito, the Florida Panthers GM, you got to be looking for a guy. You can't fill every aspect of Aaron Ekblad's game. So fill one, right? And fill the defensive side. So, I mean, I think it's in the same division. I wonder if this would happen, but a guy like David Savard, an impending unrestricted free agent with the Columbus Blue Jackets, big physical stay-at-home presence, but he has some offensive upside. He can join the rush a little bit. He has done that, but I don't know if that trade's one that happens there in that division, but that's the mold I'd be looking at. A guy who you know is going to be stout for you on the defensive end, and you worry about, and you let the offense be taken care of by the other guys.
Do you think Bill Cito knows anything about Savard?
I think he might
I'm
know.
I'm not sure that him, they yeah. might have to. They might have to scout him a little bit. He's only watched him for what 10 years now.
And he's got a great relationship with Jarmo Kekalainen too. And if Jarmo doesn't believe his team can be a playoff team, maybe he tries to, you know, help out his buddy, his former assistant GM.
Yeah, well, that's a tough pill for Jarmo to swallow after everything he's done to pull the plug and say, you know what, we don't have it this year. You know, they've built towards this, and you know, I think they're in the same boat as Nashville. If I can get in, maybe all the stars align and Patrick Laine finds his game, and you know, everything happens the way it needs to happen and we pull off a couple upsets. But so I'm not sure about that. And another thing, the last thing I think with Florida is, you know, Weegar has been so good for them. Like, he's one of those under the radar guys. And now maybe he gets a little bit more attention as, you know, he has to take some of that load on. And then, you know, you have Yandle that can run the power play. I still laugh every time Keith Yandle comes up. Joel Quenneville pulled an April Fool's joke on us totally at the start of the season. We were scrambling around like crazy. Yandle's streak was going to end. It was all over in Florida. They were going to trade him. Dude's played 20 minutes every game since. So Joel came in with the 5 month early April Fool's joke. Good on him.
He got us. No question about it. I don't know about Columbus though, Sean. I mean, look, like I said, they're not getting a lot of offense. I mean, they beat Tampa the other night, and that's a nice win. But that's after losing back-to-back to the Detroit Red Wings. You can't lose back-to-back to the Detroit Red Wings and think you're going to be a playoff team. It just can't happen. So,
no, you can't. Yeah. But I'll tell you what, how awesome would it be if Tampa finished first and Columbus finished fourth and they had to play each other again in the playoffs? And you know, if Tampa's going to be – I mean, if Columbus is going to beat anybody – in a playoff series, it's going to be Tampa after the ones they've had the last couple of times. And we'd probably get a 6 overtime game this time. So that's one thing you could hope for if Columbus can figure out a way to hold on and get that fourth spot.
Hey, and you know that John Tortorella would have his team ready for a playoff series. No question about it. It's just a matter of getting there. So I don't see it happening for them. Anyway, just a quick tease. We're going to have Eric Staal on, the new center for the Montreal Canadiens, or new forward, we should say, because I'm not 100% sure if he's going to be playing center or wing, wherever that's going to be. Eric Staal will be joining us shortly. Sean, I wanted to shift quickly to the West. Colorado, I mean, Jonas Donskoy had a hat trick in 7 minutes and 31 seconds last night in a 9-3 win against Arizona. I was actually shocked, Sean, to learn that was the 8th fastest hat trick in NHL history. The fact that there are 7 faster than 731 to me kind of blows my mind, but they're 10-0-2, the Avalanche, now in their last 12 games. And you know what that coincides with? The return of Nathan MacKinnon to the lineup after he missed 3 games. Not surprising, right?
Color me shocked.
Yeah.
Look, I don't know what you do if you're a coach of another team and you go into a game and you're like, okay, Mikko Rantanen, we're going to figure out a way to stop him. Nathan MacKinnon, we're going to figure out a way to stop him. Cale Makar, we're going to figure out a way to stop him. Landeskog, we're going to figure out a way to stop him. And then here comes Jonas Donskoy. It scores 3 goals in 7 minutes. Like, at that point, I think you just fold up and say, let's finish this game out, because they still have superstars all over the ice that haven't done a thing yet. And we're down 3.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's the thing. You look at, and you know, we do the Super 16 every week, and Tampa's had a pretty good run at the top. I couldn't do it this week. They lost to Columbus. Colorado's been so good. They handled Vegas, you know, in the series they played against them. They were the better team. You know, it was in overtime, and then they killed them in the other game. To me, they're the absolute best team in the league when they're healthy and they're starting to get healthy. Look, you know, we talk about Cale Makar all the time. How about Girardi?
Sam Girard.
Sorry. Yeah. He's crazy good, and nobody says a word about him. Again, okay, we're going to figure out how to shut down Cale Makar. And you think about it in a playoff series, right? Usually in a playoff series, you pick 4 or 5 guys and you're like, if we can shut these guys down and they can beat us with their next 4 or 5 guys, God bless them.
Right.
Colorado can beat you with their third set of 4 or 5 guys. That's the problem. The only thing, and the thing that should keep Bednar and Sakic up at night, is their goaltending. My God, if they suffer another injury like they did last year, it's a disaster.
Okay, so I want to start back to the Super 16 before I get into the goaltending there, because I was a little disappointed this week, Sean. There were 2 people who ranked the Colorado Avalanche number 1, you and me. I think we've been doing this podcast too long together because we're thinking alike these days. You know what? I thought there would be more ranking them number 1. They're rolling right now. They're unstoppable right now. They're terrific. They got everything going, stars all over the ice. They play fast. They're good defensively. Their penalty kill has been terrific. It's, you know, they're a plus 47 goal differential this season. Plus 47. The next best is Tampa Bay at plus 39. But the goaltending, Grubauer is terrific. He probably belongs in the Vezina Trophy conversation. He does belong in the Vezina Trophy conversation, but he's injury prone. We've seen that. If you can't have an if you're Joe Sakic, you have to address that before the deadline. Jonathan Bernier would be a perfect addition, right? I mean, maybe you can. We had Rod Brendamore on last week. He didn't know what they were going to do with their goaltending. Mrazek just got sent down to the AHL for conditioning and all that. They're going to have Mrazek, Reimer, and Nedeljkovic. Maybe you can steal one of those guys. You know, like, you've got to address the goaltending before the trade deadline if you're Joe Sakic, on a just-in-case basis. Because if Grubauer goes down, the whole thing is shot, in my opinion.
But nobody's been able to do that since the beginning of the year. Anton Forsberg has played for like 14 teams because of waivers.
Yeah.
Like, everybody needs that third goalie. You know, Kevin Woodley's done a number of stories for us as our goalie guy about, in the past, about the importance of how this was a three goalie league before the taxi squad, where your guy in the AHL was so important because of the wear and tear and everything else that goes on. It's been accelerated this year, and you've seen it, you know, and we need to talk about this maybe after we have Eric Staal on. AV with Carter Hart, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, let's just ruin the future of the franchise.
He's not ruining the future. He's not ruining him. He's
dude, I
out there and saying, you got to be better, buddy.
I would treat harder, that kid with dude, these are professional hockey players. There is no work ethic question. Look. That is so old school. That is like Mike Keenan old school. Hey, man, let's skate these guys for 3 hours to show. These are professional athletes that spend 12 months a year taking care of themselves mentally, physically, everything, nutritionally. This is their full-time jobs. There is not a player in the NHL that is jaking it. There's not one.
Probably not.
For a coach to come out to their franchise goalie when they haven't had a goalie in forever and say, you're not working hard enough. Like, that's just a slap in the face. Now, maybe he's not working smart enough.
Or maybe his practice habits aren't great. It's possible, you know? Maybe he's not doing enough drills. Maybe he's not doing the right drills. Maybe he's, I don't know. I mean, look, you say nobody.
I got news for you, Dan. There is nothing worse for a goalie in the NHL than practice. There is nothing worse in the NHL than a goalie in practice, because no coach in the NHL knows how to handle goalies. So they say, hey, let's do 3-on-0s. That'll be fun. That'll get all our shooters confident. And here's a goalie going, because goalies are competitive. Here's a goalie going back and forth trying to kill himself to stop all these shots, cheating to try and stop all these shots, picks up bad habits, and then he goes into a game and he does those things. There is no plan. Now, the smart thing about what he did, and not about what he said, the smart thing about what he did is he didn't dress him. He scratched him, and he said, you go over here and you work with the goalie coach. And that's it. And I think in AV's mind, he's like, the goalie coach better skate you into the ground and teach you a lesson. But go over there and do goalie-specific things by yourself with the goalie coach and maybe a shooter. Don't sit in practice trying to break up 3-on-1s and 3-on-0s. Because if you're already not confident and dudes are lighting you up all over the ice and raising their sticks and laughing and having a good time, and the goalie's sitting there by himself at the end going, oh my God, do I stink? Like, what am I going to do? Like, that's the worst possible thing you can do. There is no goalie with bad practice habits. Goalies are just trying to save themselves in practice.
Okay, but what you said is important in that you're right. Go work with the goalie coach one-on-one, work on technique, work on your form, work on, you know, where you're supposed to go, all those types of things. I've heard Henrik Lundqvist say that for years, that he just needs a week with Benny Allaire to not play in 2 or 3 games. Take a week. Carey Price did that a number of times with Stefan Waite as their goalie coach there. Just take a week, reestablish, reset it. And maybe that's what Carter Hart needs, but he also needs a the defense in front of him to play a little bit better. I mean, my goodness, it's 2-on-1 after 2-on-1, 3-on-2 after 3-on-2, breakaways. I mean, they're not playing well in front of you. They're not helping him out at all. It's not like Brian Elliott's been lighting it up. You know, I mean,
no, but
Alex Lyon's not. They just lost 6-1 to Buffalo.
Yeah, but Elliott's been the better of the two goalies. And you've actually seen this year where starting goalies have been not dressed. When the backup plays with the taxi squad, you're bringing the third goalie. you give your starting goalie the day off, and you don't say that he stinks. You don't say that he's a bad practice player. You don't say that he's working hard enough. You say, you know what? This is a really hard season. This is hard mentally. This is hard physically. It might be the hardest of all on our goalies. And I want to give my goalie, my guy, the guy that's most important to my team, a day to get himself right. I don't say my guy, the guy that's going to get me into the playoffs, is a bad practice player. He doesn't work hard enough. He has bad habits, and he's not there.
Well, I remember one time when Alain Vigneault was the coach of the Rangers. This is AV's style. He's done this many times. Agree or disagree, he's done this many times. He said about JT Miller, before JT Miller was an established NHL player, but he was on his way. He should have been at this point an established NHL player. He actually said, if he doesn't figure it out, he's going to be a great AHL player. And there was no more slap in the face to a first round pick who's been in the NHL for 100 games or so to say, if you don't figure it out here, pal, you're going to be a nice long career in the American Hockey League. And then JT Miller figured it out. He's been a really good NHL player, not for the Rangers, was with Tampa and obviously now with Vancouver. So he figured it out. But that's AV style. This is the way he coaches. He's coached this way for a long time. It is old school, Sean.
And the one thing I will say, I guess that was the reintroduction of the mini rant, but
it was not a mini rant.
The one thing I will say is I don't know Carter Hart as well as AV does. AV's with him every day. Maybe he's read the room and he knows that he's like a Patrick Waugh. He's like a Marty Brodeur. He's like those kind of guys where you can say whatever you need to say and they're basically going to look at you and say, yeah, that's what you think.
Right.
I'll go show you. But what if he's not? Have every confidence that he is. But what if he's not? What if that's such an important position, especially in Philadelphia, that why would you even take the chance?
But if he's not, is that the guy you want as your franchise goalie for a decade?
I don't know.
I don't. If he's not, I don't want that guy as my franchise goalie. If he's not the guy that can handle a little, I mean, you're in Philadelphia, man. That's not an easy market. You know, fans are all over you in that market if you don't play well, especially at that position. I mean, we've had guests. Ask Brian Boucher how that one feels, you know. I want a guy who's got that thick skin that can handle it and say, I'm going to show you. And I think Carter Hart is that guy, but you're right. I don't know him as well as AB does. I certainly don't, you know, we're going to find out about that one. And it's going to be interesting, but boy, do they got to play better in front of him. And they just Shane Gostisbehere went on waivers and cleared waivers. Now that might have something to do with his salary cap hit, but that tells you a lot about what the league right now feels about a guy like Shane Gostisbehere, who kind of represents the Flyers defense, in my opinion.
Yeah. And then, you know, on the same note, last night, AV scratched Nolan Patrick and Oscar Lindbaum and said that they needed a reset and they needed some rest and that they would come back better. And I think that's their whole team. Right. And I think he was trying again to throw a hand grenade in the room and say, all right, I did this to Carter. Now I'm doing this to our first round pick. Mm-hmm. And now I'm doing this to maybe the most popular player in the room and the guy who's overcome the most with the cancer and everything else. And look, Oscar has needed a reset in the past. Any human would that had gone through that. But I think he's so far into his bag of tricks now and trying to wake this team up. You know, they lose 6-1. They were losing 3-0 to Buffalo the previous game, and only Buffaloing allowed them to come back.
Yeah, and they didn't Buffalo last night. They actually looked pretty good, you know. The Sabres, they looked like an NHL team in that game. So that was good for them. They got the end of the 18 game skid. We were talking about the Avalanche before. I want to get back to that, Sean, but first, let's do it on the other side. We got Eric Staal. We did an interview with the new Montreal Canadiens forward. He was happy to join. I hope he was happy to join us, but we're thankful that he joined us as he sits in quarantine waiting to play. Here's that interview with Eric Staal. Eric, thanks so much for hopping on with us. So you're in a condo in Montreal quarantining. What is quarantine life like? What are you doing? Anything?
Not a lot. I mean, days have been going by relatively smoothly. I have to go into test COVID test every morning. So I do usually do that, and actually been doing some video with the coaching staff to kind of get you know, some familiarity with systems and the way that we play. And then also just they've got me a bike, some dumbbells, so I go through some home workouts and a couple more days, but obviously you know, part of the process. And Sunday I'm free, so I'm going to be on the ice, and I'm looking forward to it.
Do you have a little calendar where you're scratching off the days?
they're scratching off in my head. I've got a pretty good grasp of what day is what. I've been through this a few times, so I know how it works, and got a good routine. But obviously, looking forward to Sunday.
Yeah, no. So Sunday you're out wet and you're back on the ice. When do you think you can make your Canadiens debut? When do you think you can get in the lineup?
I'm not sure. We haven't talked about that with the coaching staff or anything. Obviously, I'm sure we'll come to that here coming up. But on the ice Sunday, so looking forward to that, and we'll kind of go from there. But it was fun watching them the other night. They played really well, and you know, beat the Oilers, and you know, played a great game. So we'll be keeping an eye again tonight, and trying to pick up what I can as far as you know, style and systems, and just be excited for when I get the chance to get in the lineup.
That's what I was going to ask you. You mentioned that the coaches have been providing some video to get you up to speed. You watched the game last night, you watch two nights ago, you watch again tonight. What have you picked up, and what about the Canadiens do you think possibly really suit you well?
Well, I mean, I think the pace that they play at is I mean, they had a week off, so everyone was probably pretty energized and excited to get out on the ice. So that definitely plays into a factor. But I think the pace, the skill level, you know, the talent kind of up and down their lineup is kind of what excites me. They've got a pretty good balance up front, and even on the back end, their puck movement and their ability to you know, transition to offense and make plays out of the D zone is you know, all things that you want as a team. So you know, excited to just try and fit in, do what I can, and be myself, and hopefully be a contributing factor to helping the team win games.
And that's interesting to me, the fitting in parts, because you know, they have some depth down the middle now too, whereas in years past they really haven't. So what do you kind of see your role being there at this point, and what have they told you that they're looking for from you?
I don't know. I mean, I think you know, right now it's wherever I end up starting the lineup is doing whatever I can with whatever role I'm given or whatever opportunity I'm given. Obviously, you know, as a competitor, and I'm sure it's the same for every guy, and every guy in on any team is you want to be out there, you want to be competing, you want to be counted on no matter what. So I'm no different. But obviously, this is a group that's been together all year and had success, and you know, they're looking to continue to, you know, get better here in the next month, and I'm just going to be another piece that fits in and enjoy, you know, every day being at the rink and you know, having fun with these guys, and you know, whatever role I'm asked to do, I'm going to do it the best I can.
Eric, you've been through this a couple of times now with trades, and I'm always curious when you talk to anybody that's been through this process, what's it like, and how quickly can you mentally flip the switch, right? Like a week ago you were playing for Buffalo, and now you're in a playoff race with an original six team. Like, everything's changed mentally. Are you able to keep up with how fast that changes, or does it take a little bit?
No, I mean, I think this is, for one, I just think this whole season and year is so different and unique, you know, not only for teams with how many games there are and protocols that we got to go through. But, you know, for me personally, I haven't been with my family. I've got three kids, three boys and a wife, but they ended up staying in Minnesota just because, you know, with the trade happening to Buffalo and the season not starting until after Christmas, you know, it just made sense for them to stay with my kids in school and in sports and going through that. So I've been solo here for the last number of months, which, you know, kind of changes things and definitely a lot different. But, you know, with the trade here to Montreal, it's, you know, I'm still living on my own. It's similar to how I was doing it in Buffalo. So, you know, I think for me, you know, the exciting part is you're right. We're in a playoff race. I'm joining a very good team, an original six team, you know, the Habs. You know, you got to enjoy it. You got to embrace it and be excited for that opportunity. And that's how I'm looking at it. And it's going to be fun.
It obviously can't be easy to be away from your family, but based on what you just said, does that allow that mental focus to kick in for just hockey and not necessarily, you know, spending time saying, oh man, I wish they were here and all that, because you have one job now, basically. Is that kind of helpful for you? Whereas if you were still in Buffalo, you'd be playing out a string likely. And now you're in a playoff race.
Yeah, no, that's definitely fair. You know, I think at times they're, you know, that's a welcome distraction when you're coming home, you know, having your kids and your family and different things, yeah, especially when you're going through some tough times. But now, you know, obviously, like you said, being here and you know, switching to, you know, an environment that, you know, every game is meaningful and important. It's, you got to be excited for that chance and that opportunity. So, you know, I've been given that with this trade and now, you know, just going to try and embrace it and enjoy the chance.
You've played a ton of games up there, including some pretty memorable ones, the Carolina run in the playoffs in that first round. Is there a little bit of, I don't know if sadness would be the right term, but that you're not going to experience, at least for now, the Bell Center as a full building, as a home player, like just the atmosphere that everybody talks about? Like, it's fun to go in that building as a visitor and try and get a result, but to play there as a home player.
No question. I mean, this, I've always said that to people that know me or people that have been around the game. This is, you know, one of my favorite places to play as a road player. It's just the atmosphere, the energy, the city on a game day, you can just kind of feel it. And even when you come in on the road, so I couldn't imagine, you know, being a home player, what that must feel like. So yeah, definitely disappointed to miss out on that feeling, especially when, you know, I've been on the other side when the Habs get rolling and they get 1-2-3, that building, is pretty electric, and you know, it's going to be a different feeling, obviously being empty, but I'll try and feel that energy through the television screens and you know, just enjoy it either way. So we'll see how it goes in the next while. Hopefully maybe there'll be some restrictions lifted and we can get some people into the building, but nonetheless still going to be a lot of fun and a great opportunity here in Montreal.
Yeah, if you go win the cup, maybe they put a statue up for you, because that's this season is, like you said before, it's so different. By now, almost three quarters of the way through a season, you'd likely have played every team in the league at this point, but you haven't, obviously. So how much of this week is about you studying up on the North Division too? You have the Montreal, obviously you have to study up on what you're going to be, you know, going into. But in just the division itself, because you haven't seen any of those teams this year, probably haven't paid much attention to them either.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I think as hockey players, everybody's usually, you know, paying attention, watching, you know, watching highlights, watching certain things on different teams and things going around. But, you know, I know from the beginning of the year watching this division, there was a lot of goals, a lot of offense, a lot of chances. And, you know, I think that'll tighten up naturally here down the stretch with the last month before playoffs start. But nonetheless, there's a ton of offensive talent and weapons and guys that can make plays and be dynamic. So definitely have to be aware and you know, you also have to be excited about that challenge and that opportunity and enjoy it. So going to be some great games coming up here in the next couple weeks, and I'm just looking to be a part of it and play hard.
As you kind of think about, you know, how this year is going to play out and what's going to happen, have you thought about the future at all, about what you want to do going forward? I mean, you're not even 2 years removed from some really good years. I'm sure you still believe that you can play and contribute. Have you thought about what you want to do after this year?
Yeah, I haven't a ton. I think that's going to be something that, you know, at this point with how the year has gone so far and, you know, what's transpired over the last calendar year personally. I think that'll be something that between my wife and I and our family we'll discuss moving forward. But I love playing. I love competing. There's nothing better to do in the world than this job. So we'll see where that goes. Obviously, when we get there, at the end of this year and the summer. But those will be decisions I think that we'll have to come together as a family moving forward.
So Sean asked you to look ahead. I actually wanted to ask you one quick question about looking back at this season in Buffalo. You go in, there's some excitement, there's some anticipation, expectations are a little higher than they had been in Buffalo, Eichel and Hall and yourself. Just describe the experience, in Buffalo. I'm sure you're ready to move. You're moving past it in quarantine right now, but what was that like? What can you take from it? Can you take anything from it?
Well, you can always take things from everything. You're not growing as a person or as a player if you're not taking things from experiences. So was it challenging? No question it was. I think there was, a lot of reasons for how things went the way they did, but a lot of them sometimes sound like excuses, and I'm not one to make excuses. The results weren't what they needed or wanted or expected to be, and it was challenging. But like I said, if you're not taking those experiences and growing and learning from them, then you're not doing the right things. So it's a great market. It's a great hockey town. It's a great sports town. I was excited, like you said, to be able to be there and join. It just didn't come into fruition the way that everyone had envisioned. And in my mind, there are reasons for that, but for me to explain them all and talk about it, I think it doesn't matter at this point. And I think, I think Kevin will do a great job of re-putting that team on the map. And, I was happy to be able to work alongside him and, have that opportunity there, but now, I'm moving forward with the chance with the Canadians and, looking forward to getting out of quarantine Sunday and then hopefully getting in the lineup soon.
Two-parter for me before I let you go. One, was there at least a little bit of a smile on your face when you saw the Sabres finally break their losing skid? You, I'm sure you have a lot of friends there. And then two, the trade deadline's coming up. Obviously, with Buffalo where they are, there's so much speculation about who could move. And Taylor Hall's at the top of that list. You played with him this whole year. I'm wondering if you could give us a little bit of a scouting report. He hasn't had the year he wants, but what he could do to help a contending team.
Yeah, I was happy there. I mean, there's a you invest a lot daily, especially as a professional athlete, and with the amount of attention that obviously that streak was getting, it was probably nice for those guys just to get that out of the way. It was difficult for a good long while, and I was definitely happy to see that, and they played a very good game and deserved the win, so it was nice to see. With Taylor, a competitor. I mean, the guy skates like the wind. Really can drive the play, and like you said, I think the offensive confidence just didn't develop. This year, with not only him, with a lot of our guys there, but you can find that quickly as an offensive guy. I know what that's like. And that can come quickly. So if Taylor does move on from there, he'll add, that speed, that power, that, offensive ability to drive play into the offensive zone and create chances. So, obviously we'll see what happens moving forward with all that, but, I was happy to play alongside him when I did.
Last one before we let you go, you get out on Sunday, you'll get on the ice. Eventually you'll get in the game with the Montreal Canadiens. I'm curious, from your perspective, the impact it has on you being a Canadian guy getting to play for a Canadian team, and not just a Canadian team. I mean, the most historical of them. What impact can that have on you and your hockey career, your hockey life?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, what an opportunity. You just have to embrace it. I mean, I had numerous text messages and calls from, you know, a lot of friends and family that, you know, grew up either Habs fans or Leafs fans. So some are happy, some aren't, but I think I can transfer a lot of fans over to the Habs side, you know, once we get going. And, you know, I'm treating it as just a great opportunity, excitement, and I'll definitely have some slight nerves the first game, but those will diminish once the game starts and I get playing, and I just enjoy being out there because it's what I love to do, and I get to do it for, you know, an unbelievable market and a great team. So gonna be fun, and hopefully it does good things for me and for our group, and it's just gonna just enjoy it daily.
Well, we're really looking forward to seeing you out there. Probably not as much as you're looking forward to being out there after being cooped up for a little over a week. But we're looking forward to seeing you and wish you the best of luck with the rest of the season. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Eric, for hopping on with us. Living the quarantine life, Sean. He gets out on Sunday, and he'll be out there soon enough with the Montreal Canadiens. You know what, Sean? I think this guy can have a big impact on the Montreal Canadiens. He's got a lot of game left, in my opinion. Big, physical, power forward. Plays well down the middle, can play on the wing. I like the addition for Montreal. Can't ever have too many guys like that. And I think he's a guy that can create some offensive chances for them.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, he's not, like I said in the interview, he's not even 2 years removed from one of his career years. You know, I don't think the wheels come off that quickly. And, you know, there's a lot of players in Buffalo that struggled to generate offense. He talked about that a little bit at the end with Taylor Hall. So, you know, I definitely think he can have an impact. And, you know, I thought it was such a great interview. Eric's such a good talker. But to me, the thing that struck me the most was just kind of that tinge of sadness, right? That you don't even think about it with some of these guys. He hasn't seen his family in so long, right? Think about when the season started. We were joking earlier about Joel getting us with the April Fool's joke at the start of the season. It seems like 2 years ago. And that whole time he's been in Buffalo without his family, because that's what this requires. And, you know, I think sometimes we forget that, and these guys are professionals and things are demanded of them. But there is a human element. And I thought he laid it out there pretty convincingly, that without trying to make an excuse, just that this is his reality and it doesn't change much. You just move from one hotel room to another hotel room, yeah. Basically.
Yeah, no, that's true. And then you got to sit there by yourself for a week too, which can't be, yeah, I mean, look, it can be lonely, you know. Forget about it, can't be easy. It just can be lonely. But he's going to get out, and he's going to get back with it. You know, he's going to get with a new team, and he's right though. Like, he's in a playoff race now, so it does allow him, right? I mean, it does give him something to look forward to go, you know, in terms of going to the rink every day and to battle for something. Because if he was still in Buffalo, Sean, he wouldn't be battling for anything right now except pride, really.
Yeah. And he's been through so much, you know. He's been through a couple of trades. He's been through some down seasons and then back to some up seasons. I think there's a lot, not only on the ice, but mentally and just that he can give this Canadiens team as they try and find their way in this playoff race.
Before we got to Eric, Sean, I wanted to talk more a little bit about the West. And we touched on the Avalanche, obviously 10-0-2 in their last 12. But I'm looking at that division, Sean, and I'm saying to myself, does anybody want fourth place in that division right now? Right. I mean, you look at the teams here, the Blues really struggling, right? 2-5-4 since March 6th. They're not scoring. PK has been awful. They're giving up a lot of goals. And then you look at their schedule. They play 17 of their last 21 games against Vegas, Colorado, or Minnesota. Good luck to St. Louis, right? They're banged up defensively. Pareko's still out. Then you got Arizona. Arizona won 3 straight. Then they lose 9-3. Against Colorado. The LA Kings, they lost 3 in a row and 6 of 8 before beating Vegas. I mean, who wants number 4 in this division?
It might even be who wants number 3. St. Louis is really scaring me at this point. Like, you know, you talked about Dallas being who they are and Columbus being who they are. Is this who St. Louis is, right? And they're only 4 points up on Los Angeles. They've scratched Mike Hoffman to try and get him going. Their goaltending hasn't been spectacular. They've had trouble scoring. Like, is this, you know, who they are? And 2019 is a long time ago in hockey years. Yeah. This isn't the same team. So clearly they missed Petrangelo. So it's really, to me, it's almost a three
Well, you got Minnesota there. I mean, you got Vegas, Colorado, Minnesota. They're going to be the top three. You'd have to think, unless there's a huge drop-off, right? I mean, they're going to be the top three unless there's a huge drop-off. And then you figure St. Louis would be that team, but they're not.
No, and I've really liked what Los Angeles has done. You know, they come out against Vegas and they score right away.
Yeah.
And you know, it wasn't like – wasn't like, oh my god, we scored. It was like, yeah, like, let's put them on their back foot, you know. As a crazy aside, I don't know if you saw it yesterday, North Macedonia beat Germany and end in soccer and ended their like 16 game World Cup qualifying streak.
Shockingly, I did not see that.
And when it was over, right, I'm watching the highlights, and when it's over, I expect like lunacy. You know, you're North Macedonia, you just beat Germany. And they were like, yeah, hey, that's cool. And they, you know, shook hands and patted each other on the back. But there was nobody doing cartwheels or anything like that. And it really struck me, like, that's what it is, right? When, and North Macedonia's not going to do anything, but that's what it is. Like, you just, yeah, we're professionals. We can do this. Like, and that's, to me, that's what Los Angeles did. They were like, yeah, we put our skates on the same way you do, and there's no reason why we can't beat you. And that's the maturation of a team. And you're starting to see that with Los Angeles. So, you know, I kind of put them in the same boat. San Jose's got the same number of points, but I just don't feel the same way about them. Like, I think it's Los Angeles, Arizona, and St. Louis, like you said. And you know, each of them has shown a piece of why they could be that four. And that's what this whole – across the league, right? That's what this next month is going to be about. There's a lot of top three heavy in almost every division, and then you're figuring out these fours, and there's two, three, four teams involved. Yep. And that's where the intrigue's going to be.
Yeah, no, really no, except for the North, in my opinion, you know, right? I mean, except for that division. But you know, you look at LA, you bring up San Jose. I agree with you on San Jose. They kind of are what they are. They're not a maturing team. They are a team, we know what they are, and this is kind of what they are. And maybe they hit a hot streak and they go in, but I just don't see it. Whereas LA is a maturing team. And the thing is, I looked at, you know, LA only has six games left against Vegas and Colorado, one against Minnesota. That's a very favorable schedule for the Los Angeles Kings as a maturing team to not have to face the cream of the crop in that division a lot down the stretch here. And in Arizona, they got 11 of their last 20 games against the California team. So Anaheim, LA, and San Jose, again, winnable games, right? Very winnable games for them. Whereas St. Louis has a grind. I mean, I don't see it from the Blues. They have shown me nothing of late. Their defense is really a wreck. You think about what they've lost, right? Petrangelo gone to Vegas. Bouwmeester retired. Now, that's been a while now, but again, he's not there. And Parayko's been out too. It's a lot. That's a three huge, big defensemen, imposing defensemen that are not there for the St. Louis Blues. Their goaltending hasn't been that great. And they play their next eight games and 15 of the next 16 against the top three teams in that division. The Blues have not proven to me that they can win a number of those games to stay fourth in that division, where the other teams, Arizona and LA, and I'll be honest, I didn't look up San Jose's schedule, but Arizona and LA have very favorable schedules compared to that.
Yeah, and the only thing I'll say there is if somehow St. Louis figures this out and survives that stretch and takes that four spot, that's not a team you want to look at in the playoffs. I think whoever's the one would look at Arizona or LA and be like, okay, that's somewhat of a reward for finishing first in the division. You know, LA doesn't have recent playoff experience. Arizona, I don't think, is as deep as St. Louis when St. Louis is hitting on all cylinders. But if that St. Louis team figures it out, gets Parayko back, Hoffman gets into some sort of a groove, Tarasenko comes back all the way from his injury, you know, he's starting to show flashes. That's a team as a one you really don't want to play. They're tested. If Binnington gets hot, like, you're just like, I played 56 games and killed myself to be the one, and here's what I get. So they're still probably the favorite just because of their pedigree, but they got to be getting nervous. And clearly they are. Scratching Mike Hoffman,
yeah, they are.
To me,
yeah.
is you know,
no question,
a sign of nervousness.
Nervous. Yeah. Quickly, before I did want to get to the Penguins, Brian Burke's comments about the need for a center. But before that, speaking of centers, we had Nathan MacKinnon this week and Connor McDavid this week. the argument for the best player in the league right there. When you could toss in a Sidney Crosby, obviously still he's playing like it. Both of those guys lost their mind a little bit this week, didn't they? You had McDavid going after Kotkaniemi in Montreal and tossing the elbow, getting fined. And then McDavid, after a bit of a wrestling match with Connor Garland, finds Garland's helmet in his hands and underhand tosses it back to him a little bit high, right at his face. So both get fined. Kind of shows you, Sean, that even superstars, you know, that they feel the emotion of the games and they can lose it sometimes.
Well, of course. I mean, they're the most driven guys on the ice, and they expect so much out of themselves. And when it's not coming, you know, they react. And you think about that Edmonton-Montreal game, and Montreal just jumped all over them.
Yeah.
They had a week off because of COVID issues, and they just 4-0 and boom. And we all know how important points are in that North division as everybody jockeys for position. You know, and every time Edmonton shows that they could be that team, they're the hardest team for me going back to the Super 16 where I want to slot them. Cause some days they look awesome. And then other days they look like they're not a very good team. And against Montreal, they look like they were not a very good team. Yeah. And then, you know, Nathan MacKinnon last night, I don't know how much frustration there is when you're putting the boots to the other team, but Connor Garland's been known to elicit that kind of reaction once or twice in his career because he just never stops. His motor never stops running and he never stops competing because that's what got him to the NHL. And he's one of those kids that he knows the minute he says, I'm an NHLer, I belong with all these players, is the minute he's not an NHLer anymore. That I'll show you attitude is what keeps him in the NHL. And it doesn't matter whether it's Nathan MacKinnon or Belmare or whoever it is, they're all equal to him. They're all people that he has to prove, I belong here and I'm going to show you I belong here.
Yeah, he's proven he feels he has to prove it every day. It's the way he's gone about his entire career, very much like a lot of guys. I mean, the one guy I think of in that capacity is Marty St. Louis. He always felt that need to prove it every single day, even though he's a Hall of Famer. I will say this, I heard Elliot Friedman say it, I believe it was on SiriusXM NHL Network Radio, about the McDavid hit on Kotkaniemi. The Oilers fans can't go crying the next time McDavid gets hit like that and the guy doesn't get suspended because Connor did it to somebody else, right? I mean, that's one thing. You got to give and you got to take. So it's something I thought it was a good point that Elliot made there.
You cannot take away a fan's God-given right.
Oh, you can.
To complain.
No, you can't.
And to feel persecuted and to feel the whole world's against them, that the referees hate him, that the broadcasters hate him, that everybody in the world hates him except for their 7 best friends who are also fans of that team. Yeah, so you cannot take that right away.
Show the clip, though. You got to show that clip, though, every time it happens. Just, you know, oh, by the way, this did happen, right? There's no statute of limitations on that clip, I don't think. Pittsburgh, Brian Burke, Ron Hextall, both talking about getting a big imposing forward. Could be a center before the trade deadline with Evgeny Malkin and Teddy Bluger out. Now, Burke did say that this was in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette that Jared McCann and Freddie Gauthier have been good at filling the need there. But if the Pittsburgh Penguins are looking out for a center, it shows you obviously what Hextall and Burke came in to do for this season, which is do whatever is possible to keep the run going, get into the playoffs, and have a chance to win the Stanley Cup. I don't know who that center is for the Pittsburgh Penguins, but whoever it is going to be a good number 3 because he's not going to be a 1 or a 2.
And if he is, oh boy.
Yeah.
They're really good.
Good luck.
But the couple of things that struck me from Burke, and it's always great when, you know, he decides he's going to talk and, you know, I wonder how often, I wonder how often it's going to be in Pittsburgh, but you've covered Brian Burke for a long time. And I was thinking about it when I read it, I'm trying to put together how many times he's used the I'm not a fan of bringing a knife to a gunfight.
Yeah.
Like that is one of his go-tos, yeah. You know, along with truculence and a couple others that he has, but he loves that. I'm not going to bring a knife to a gunfight. And I don't know that the Penguins are bringing a knife to a gunfight. They're a pretty good team and they're going to be a better team when Malkin returns. And you know, depending on what happened with Jerry, he's on the road with them and, you know, he's day to day and, you know, he's an important part of what they do. But you think about the injuries that they have and then you think about the month of March that they had and you think about Sidney Crosby, who had 21 points this month. And it seems to me like if they put it all back together, They got a pretty good shot of making some noise this year.
I agree. And Crosby has been terrific. It usually does happen when one of them goes out. When Crosby goes out, Malkin picks up his game. When Malkin goes out, Crosby picks up his game. And 21 points in the month of March. And I'm looking around the league at this, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, Adam Fox for the Rangers. He has just been terrific. He could be the player of the month, right? You know, easily. I mean, good Lord. I mean, he's just been awesome. So has Crosby. So is his own teammate, Mika Zibanejad. Helps when you play the Flyers in their defense and whatnot. But so is McDavid. So is McKinnon. It's a lot of good performances in the month of March. But Crosby, without Malkin, and be really putting that team on his shoulders, what I mean, that is vintage Sidney Crosby for this month. And he can still do it. I mean, it's pretty amazing how good this guy still is.
You're talking about like he's a relic.
He's not a relic. He's just, he's not, but it's just, he does every time you wonder, like, is he still the best? Is he still, should he still be in that conversation? He goes out and has a month of March like he just had.
Do you listen to our podcast,
Dan? I do. And you, this was a couple of weeks ago and you went out there and you said, and then of course you reined it back in last week with your mea culpa on Connor McDavid, but you know.
But that has nothing to do with Crosby when we're having the conversation about Crosby and Matthews and everybody else you wanted to throw in. I mean, Matthews and McKinnon and McDavid and everybody else you wanted to throw in there. And who, and I said, what about Sidney Crosby?
I know.
Who are you going to take? Like, I'm still taking Sidney Crosby because he's the smartest cat on the ice.
Yeah.
And to me, he just showed it again.
Great month for him. And they, you know, it always does happen. Like I said before, when Malkin goes out, Crosby steps up. When Crosby goes out, Malkin steps up. So good for them. All right. Before we close it out, got the Olympic talk. And like you said, on trade deadline day, when there's nothing going on, well, if there's nothing going on, you'll have the networks that cover this for hours on end doing their Olympic rosters. And now they can pretend to be Stan Bowman, because Stan Bowman is the general manager for Team USA in the 2022 Olympics, which will be in Beijing. And Bill Guerin's going to be his assistant GM, though those have been named. We don't know when they're going to name a coach. That's going to take some time here. But USA Hockey making some news with Stan Bowman. And he's been around a long time with USA Hockey, been on their advisory boards and advisory groups. He was the GM, also co-GM of Team North America for the World Cup of Hockey, which gave him perspective on a lot of these younger players that he's going to be picking for this team now when they were a little bit younger, obviously 5 years ago. So there it is. Stan Bowman's got a big job ahead of him. As he said, their expectations are great, and he wants to embrace the pressure.
The expectations should be great.
They better
be. This is an unbelievable pool of American players.
Like, if the NHL goes.
Yes. And that's the assumption. And this is an NHL podcast, so we'll just pretend that they're going, and that everything that needs to be sorted out will be sorted out. But I don't know if I can remember. This is clearly as deep as the Vancouver team. And probably more talented than that Vancouver team went to a golden goal. Oh, it was Sidney Crosby again. but they're clearly as talented as that team. They're more talented than that team. The depth and, you know, the one thing I thought was interesting is I thought that 2000 team was built a little bit to play Canada. And it was built right. You know, there was no complaining about it. You know, everything about it. They were big. They were heavy. All those things, and there were some controversial, you know, exclusions. And Bowman said, we're not going to do that. Mm-hmm. We're going to pick the 23 best players. And I think the past couple of Olympics have shown that that's what you need to do. Like, you can find really talented players to find fourth line minutes and maybe make a difference when top lines cancel in top line. And I think the Americans have a chance of actually canceling some top lines with the skill that they have. You think about it, and it's almost dizzying how good this team could be. You know, you just mentioned Adam Fox and you know, all the other players that the U.S. can bring. I mean, it's just – I can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be good. You know what, you're right, and I think Stan Bowman's got the right perspective on how to build a team and not just to beat Canada, because there's a lot of good teams, obviously, and that are going to be in the Olympics. But they don't have to do that anymore. They don't have to think along those lines. Their talent pool is deep enough now to where they don't have to think along those lines. They could pick the 23, you know, players that they feel fits the best roster to win, and it will match up with whoever Canada puts out there. It will, because it's that good. Canada might be able to throw two or three teams out there, whereas the U.S. might not be able to do that, but you're only picking one. So who gives, you know, it doesn't matter about the other two or three teams. You got to pick one, and the U.S., the team that they will pick of the pool of players that they have, assuming health and all those things, and obviously assuming the NHL players go, that pool of players is going to be good enough to compete with Canada, whoever they pick. No question about it, because that's how deep and talented it is right now. What they have to do is find the guys who are going to be the first line guys on their NHL teams, fourth line guys on the USA, on the Olympic team. That's the transition that they're going to have to find. And I don't think they're going to have trouble finding that.
No. And the other thing is, you don't go into a gunfight with a knife. And the Americans won't at probably the most important position in a short tournament, which is goaltending.
Right.
They have the goaltending up the middle. They have up the middle as good as anybody else.
Yeah.
You know, you could argue that their goaltending will be as good as anybody's in the tournament. You can argue that it'll be better than Canada's.
You could. You absolutely could. No question about it. So get your pens and paper out and start writing your own rosters down, because that's the best part to me about the run and the buildup to the Olympics when the NHL players are involved, is the Olympic rosters. Remember when on NHL.com, Sean, we used to have that red tab on the top, it just said Olympic rosters. It was the most clicked on part of the site every single day. And it would like crush any other story, because everybody just wanted to see what the Olympic rosters were.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's best on best, and who doesn't love a good argument? Clearly you and I do. but it's best on best. And does this guy belong, or does that guy belong? You know, you don't get that on NHL teams, because there's a clear hierarchy, and you're basically arguing about like the best AHL player coming up, and is he going to play on the fourth line or the third line? But with the Olympics, the possibilities for these top teams are almost endless. Who's going to play, how they work together, and then you finish the roster and you're like, okay, these are the 23 guys we settled on. Now who plays with who? And you get to have even more fun. You know, does Crosby, you know, play with McKinnon? Do you move somebody to the wing? Do you do this? Do you do that? Just endless hours of distraction.
And I'm sure we'll have those.
We can all embrace at times.
We'll all embrace it. I'm sure we'll have it too eventually, but not yet, because we'll close this one out now, Sean. Next week, more trade deadline talk. And that will be probably our last podcast before the deadline on April 12th. And then we'll do a reaction after that. But this was fun. Had Eric Staal on, so we thank him for jumping on with us and went around the league. And more talk next week, Sean.
Yeah, I can't wait. We'll be 4 days out from the deadline, approximately. And things, I think that's going to be the sweet spot. Either things will have just happened, you know, and we didn't mention, and we should have, you know, how much that quarantine change as it starts to happen is going to affect the market. So, you know, we'll start to see the benefits of that perhaps. And, you know, either we're going to be talking about a lot of trades and a lot of potential trades, or we're going to be picking all Olympic teams next week.
Either way, I hope you listen, and everybody stay safe out there.